Alison Ferns on BBC Sussex.
Time now then for some sound advice courtesy of the gadget detective himself. We've got a caller already, Fevzy. Sally calls from Wadhurst. Afternoon, Sally.
Hi.
Hello, you're through to Fevzy.
Oh, hi. Right. I'm not much of a mobile phone queen or anything, but I've just recently put the Facebook app on my mobile phone, and
yes.
I also put it on my work phone because I have to do Facebook for work. And I've noticed with both phones, since I've done that, which is probably about 2 weeks ago, the battery life of both phones doesn't seem to be as good.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to know is it the app that's causing the problem, or is it the fact that I'm asking for notifications? And if it's the notifications, how do I turn them off on Facebook? Because
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. So the Facebook app is quite well known for being a bit of a resource hog. So it does lots, and you know, by default, it will be accessing certain sensors within the phone, such as your location as well. And there are settings within Facebook whether you want it to post your location when you're actually posting to Facebook. So there are things like that you can switch off. Notifications wouldn't take a great deal, but generally speaking, the more you can streamline it, Sally, the more efficient it will be. If you want, you can switch off separately. What sort of phone have you got, by the way?
I've got, I think they're both fives. Yeah, both iPhone 5.
Okay, so with an iPhone, you can certainly switch off a lot of the wireless functionality and the GPS. So you can switch off the location feature on it, so that will switch off the GPS circuitry. You can also make sure that things like Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are switched off as well. It may be that the app is enabling those, but you can go back in and switch them off. If it switches them back on again, then you need to go into the Facebook app itself and turn them off. But essentially, if you think about it, any of those wireless or location-based services that the apps can access, and Facebook gives itself access to pretty much everything, I mean, including your firstborn child, so be careful with that. any of those services, they take up battery life and they will kill it quite rapidly. And a lot of people, even who aren't running Facebook, and this is a tip, if you're finding that your phone isn't lasting as long on its battery as it used to, now that could be a normal part of the aging of the battery, but it's worth checking that all these services, if you don't use them, switch them off. And also, there is a privacy aspect to this, Sally, as well. I personally switch off the GPS locationing on my phone unless I'm actually using it for sat nav or something that actually needs it. Otherwise,
yeah, I think mine's off. How can I tell?
If you go into the settings, you'll see there'll be settings for wireless, location, and Bluetooth. They're all in the settings page. It will be slightly different with each version of the iPhone and each version of iOS that you're using, but it's all there. I mean, you're lucky with the Apple stuff because it's a bit easier to get to. You can get to it in Android as well, but it just takes a little bit more time.
So privacy. Oh, I see. Yeah, no, my location services are on, so turn them off.
Yeah. Well, I would, because put it this way, if you need to do something that needs it, you will soon become aware of it. For example, your sat-nav application might suddenly not know where it is.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, you don't really need these things switched on. From a privacy point of view, from a health point of view as well, you don't necessarily want... I mean, for example, a lot of people, when they go onto a form of transport that doesn't allow them access to cell phone towers and signal, they don't put the phone into standby, into flight mode. And the reason for doing that is, if you imagine, let's say you go onto the London Underground, you're not going to get a cell signal in most places. There are some cell towers. So what happens then is that the phone thinks it's out of range or it's a long way from a tower, so it pumps up its amplifier trying to reach out to the furthest tower in the hope of making a connection. It never will make that connection, but in the effort it will kill the battery. It's an amplifier and it's pumping up the volume. Imagine it's just shouting, and in that form of electronic shouting that it does, it will kill the battery.
Ah, that's worth knowing. So just pop it into flight mode.
Yeah, absolutely. So flight mode isn't only for flights, it's for any location where you really have no prospect of getting that signal. Don't kill your battery, you know, for it trying. And also, frankly, from a health point of view, and opinions on this differ, but you don't necessarily want something sort of strapped to your torso which is emitting very high levels of radiation, because your body does absorb some of that, and it's unlikely to be good for you.
Can I turn, because I personally don't use my phone. I don't really use it I have a sat nav, so I don't use it. I actually do use my phone mainly as a phone.
Unusual
now.
It but, is, yeah. And so, they're not very good at making calls these days, smartphones.
I know, but so can I turn the sort of 3G/4G? Off.
You can turn the data off, yes, which will kill the 3G/4G. You can turn that off. And one time when it's very important to turn the data off is when you're abroad. If you're not certain of what you're going to be charged for roaming, and they have brought it somewhat under control within the European Union, although how long we'll be able to take advantage of that is another matter. But when you're abroad, if you're not very clear about what you're being charged, then you turn the data off. And you can turn the data off and still leave the phone bit on, as it were.
Yeah.
And that's worth doing for sort of cost. Because the other thing to bear in mind is that your apps, when you install an app, Sally, those apps have what are known as permissions. So no one ever reads it, but you're giving permission for that app to access certain elements of your phone. For example, data or location, sometimes your address book, which often it doesn't need, but somehow it wants to have anyway. You can sometimes try to restrict those permissions or deprive particular apps of it. And in iPhone, you can actually go in and you can see a list of all the apps and the permissions that are associated with them. So that in that way, you can sort of tailor what you want to have what, because by default, they grab much more than ostensibly they should need.
I'll obviously go in and have a look at that. So if I just turn my mobile data off, so basically 3G and 4G aren't going to be spending all day trying to access Facebook, because they must be talking all the time, even if I'm not on the app.
It depends on... Well, so this is what I was trying to get at. So if the apps have the permission to access data, let's say, then they might be, for example, trying to update themselves in the background. If they're a map app, they may try and update location, and emails may try and update emails and so forth. And you don't necessarily want that, it can kill the power. And also, if you're running an app that you know is very important to you, then you don't want lots of stuff in the background sort of drawing processor resources as well as battery.
It's always worth, isn't it, just kind of, as you say, sort of doing a little health check, making sure what you've allowed and what you haven't allowed to try
to conserve
that battery.
Do a sort of audit of it, because it's quite frightening that apps that have got no legitimate, in my view, reason, I won't name any, but apps that have no legitimate reason for having access to your address book have it.
Yeah, and they don't need it, as you say. And also, it's using up your battery. And as we know, there is nothing worse than running out of battery. Yeah. If you have a question for Fevzi this afternoon, you can give us a call. The number 03-459-57-0057. Many thanks to Sally in Wadhurst. We'll hear from Jan in Hastings after this.
BBC Sussex Drive Time on BBC Sussex.
Our gadget detective Fevzi is taking your calls this afternoon. Jan calls from Hastings, and you've got another question about phones.
Yes, I have. Hello there.
Hello, Jan.
Hello. My question is, if I could just explain first, I'm partially sighted, so I obviously can't have a lot of the phones out there. I do have a very old Dora phone. It's very sad and very basic, a bit like me. But all I really need is to be able to call somebody or text.
Yes.
This one's begins sort of to play up, I think, because I've pressed the button so many times, it's getting a bit tired. I wondered, can you recommend anything? I only want to, I say, phone and text.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Doro phones, because we've got one for review later if we have time. But Doro, D-O-R-O, is one of those companies that specialise in phones for people who don't want all the features but want a basic phone, sometimes older users or non-technical users. So they have smartphones in their range, but they also have things that they call easy phones. There's basically two formats of those. You get the ones that are just what they call candy bar phones, you know, just a normal phone with buttons on the front. Then you get the clamshell phones. Those have the advantage that when you close them, you can't accidentally press the keys on them, right. and you tend to have a bigger screen. So there are all sorts of those in their range, that, you know, a basic one like a 65 Doro 6520, I think it's about £50. So they do cost more than the standard phones, but they've got that sort of ease of use, and for people with partial sighting and so forth, they've got those considerations built into them. There's essentially two ways that you can go with this, Jan. One is that you can go for a really simple Doro type phone, and I think and there are others that do, you know, similar phones. It's not just Doro, but you could go for something like that. It's a basic phone, it doesn't do much, it will allow you to text and so forth. Or you go the other way, you go for a specialist smartphone that, although it's a smartphone, is designed to be easier to use. Now, my opinion is they're still not as easy as the easy phones to use, but they have more functionality and so forth built into them. So I think, I'm just trying to remember the number of it. I think, yeah, the Doro 8030 is a smartphone. It runs the Android operating system, but it's a lot easier to use. It's customizable, so you get, for example, pictures of the people that you want to call on the front screen, and you just tap their picture. But it's in some senses it's easier to do texting, because instead of having a number keypad where you have to press the keys several times to get a letter C, for example, it gives you a proper little sort of on-screen keyboard with a sort of an area for each letter of the alphabet. So it depends on whether your site will deal with that or not.
Yeah,
I think the important
that is the problem, because I have to hold it up to my nose with a magnifying glass, because I think I'm not missing out on the mobile world.
Yeah. Well, you see, then the other thing is, you see, then you have things like the Apple smartphones, the iPhones, and they are quite legendary in terms of their what they call accessibility options. So if you press the home button on it three times in rapid succession, it goes into a usability mode where it reads to you everything that's on the screen.
Oh, that's the Apple Smart.
Yeah, it's an Apple iPhone, and it's a feature of its operating system. So it will do things like that. So look, this is a very subjective area, and different people will favour different types. So you either go for a very sophisticated phone which has these smart features built in and it talks to you and all the rest, or you go for a really basic phone with partially sighted use in mind. If you're going for the basic, then look at one of their sort of easy phones, they call them, as I say, sort of £50 up. If you're going for a smartphone, consider either, for example, a Doro 8030 or something like an iPhone SE, Yeah, or an iPhone SE is also good. So they're different approaches. So the thing is to do with this, Jan, buy it in such a way that if you don't get on with it after a week or two, that you can return it and make sure. Consumer law changed last year, and it's slightly less considerably less generous to consumers than it used to be. It used to be that you could buy any item remotely, i.e. at a distance, be it online or over the phone, and if you didn't like it for any reason, including it didn't match your curtains, you could just return it. Now the law says that if you return an item, it should be returned in a condition where they can still sell it as new. Otherwise, they have the right to charge you a restocking fee. That said, some retailers, including Apple, give you what they call a remorse period, where I think you get about 2 weeks in which to try something and return it. So you could always try an iPhone if you can. What some people do is they put it on their credit card at the beginning of their month, and therefore if they need to get it refunded after 2 weeks, they end up actually not having to pay for it.
Clever. So there you go, Jan.
If you do it that way. But you do get a remorse period, and Apple are good for it, so they will give you more than your
So if you don't get
rights.
On with it, you can bring it back. Well, I hope that helps, Jan. It's interesting that Jan should call, because as you mentioned, the gadget of the week is actually one of these Doro phones.
I would just say I don't know Jan, and I didn't put her up to calling to
I was wondering.
I really don't know.
Let's talk,
I wouldn't be so obvious.
Let's talk about this phone. And this is a big button mobile phone, but it also has IUP, whatever that is.
Okay, so this is called the Doro Secure 580 IUP. Not to be confused with the 580 without the IUP. So it's two phones in the range. They look identical. But the IUP feature, it stands for Isolated User Protection. So this is a phone typically aimed at either older users or users that may have dementia or may have maybe partially sighted. So when you look at this phone, first of all, it doesn't have a numeric keypad on it, as almost all other phones does. It has just it sits comfortably in the phone. It's sort of hand, it's rubberized, and it's got ABCD buttons in a vertical column, big ABCD buttons, and to the right of the ABCD is just a space where you can write the name of the person. So it's four memories built into the phone that you can access with a single key press. So this is really for people who don't want to send text messages. You can receive them on here. Don't want to be able to dial, you know, a multiplicity of numbers. Just need to be able to contact loved ones or carers or things like that. But there aren't that many that sort of look like this and do this. And some people get to a point where they really can't handle even what's thought of as a basic phone, because all those buttons start becoming confusing. And the nice thing is it's a little paper card under a plastic strip, and you get some spare ones too. So if you want to sort of disenfranchise your family members, you can just write in other names there over time. So it has that. So it's very easy to use. But it has some additional features. Now, a lot of phones have on them, on the back of them, a button, an emergency button that you can press if you're in distress. And you press it and you hold it for 3 seconds, and then it will contact in sequence a number of pre-programmed numbers of individuals, such as, you know, family members or carers or even emergency services. This has that. But sometimes it's the case that people will have an accident and they may lose consciousness. They may not be in a position to do that. Or if they're suffering from some form of dementia, they may not have the wherewithal to press the button when they're in an anxious state. So this phone and the IUP version of this phone alone has some additional features. First of all, it has fall detection. So if the phone is, say, on your belt or, you know, in your pocket and you fall, the phone will detect that you have fallen. Yes.
Wow.
Without you pressing any buttons or without you crushing the button on it and it activating that way, it will detect that you have fallen. It will then start to contact the people in your emergency list, and it will do two things. It will send them a help message, and then it will send them a GPS location. Because if you're not able to communicate where you are, maybe that person is out and about.
That's so clever, isn't it?
Maybe they've gone walkabout and you know, without a carer or something without them, and then they've had a fall. You can find this could literally save people's lives.
I'm thinking, you know, just listening, there'll be a lot of people with kind of elderly relatives that, you know, that they do worry about.
Yeah.
This could be ideal. Is it very expensive?
No, it's the list price on it is about, I think, £130. You can find it for a tad less than that. They're not widely sold, but if you look at the Doro website, which I think is doro.co.uk, you can find it on there. It also has a setting which it can look for if you are motionless for too long. Again, this could indicate a state of unconsciousness or something. So if you are completely still for too long, and it sort of deactivates that when it's on charge or when you're in the midst of a call and so forth. So it has those facilities. It also has a safety timer, which could be of use to some users, which is this. Let's say someone lives on their own, and they're going to have a shower. They can't take the phone in the shower with them, but they set the timer and they say, okay, I should be able to come out and deactivate this timer within, say, 40 minutes, half an hour, whatever it is. If at the end of the countdown period you haven't come back and deactivated that, then the phone will assume something is wrong. You may have slipped and fallen in that shower. And again, it will go through and start contacting those people. Now, obviously, that use needs a little bit more wherewithal to set it up, but you know, there are all sorts of people that would find this useful. It's not only for people with sort of cognitive problems, it's also for people that just want a simple phone,
yeah,
and would benefit from those additional features. It's just really nice. I've got it here in my hand. It just sort of feels nice. It's all rubbery. It doesn't slip out your hand easily. And it's simple to use. And when we get to that point in life when we need simple, I think this is a good example.
Yeah, very
of that.
Clever. So that's the Doro Secure 580 IUP. Yes. Norman's given us a call. Norman, you're through to Fevzy.
Yes, I'm here. My query is about a Doro as well.
Oh, goodness. Oh. Okay. I really haven't put these people. I don't know Norman, do I, Norman?
No, you don't. Okay. I recently bought a Doro 6030.
Yeah.
So I wanted a simple phone, not being too technically minded.
Yeah.
And it works fine, but I cannot download the photos to my computer because my computer says I cannot show still pictures owing to no DCIM format.
Okay, the Doro 6030 is one of these clamshell phones. It's like a flip phone. It's got a little camera built into
thing,
it.
Yeah.
And I assume you're connecting this up to the computer and you're trying to transfer the pictures off. Is that
that's
what,
right?
What you're doing?
Yeah.
And you're connecting it via a cable, presumably a USB.
Well,
cable.
I tried connecting it with the cable.
Yeah.
And I went into the Doro shop, and he sold me an SD card for £12.
Right.
And I come back, and he transferred the pictures onto the card. I come back, I put the card in, and I still get the same result.
Yeah, so the card should be formatted in the phone, and when you format, so when a card comes brand new, it's completely blank, and it there's no way of actually writing any information to it until it's been formatted. And one of the things that happens when you format, Norman, is that it sets up a DCIM folder and places the pictures within it. So
yeah.
I'm wondering whether the card has been correctly formatted and whether that formatting was done on your particular device.
Well, he did it in the Vodapone shop. But
and did he do it inside your own phone? Did he set it up using your own phone?
Yes, he did, yeah.
Okay.
He said he transferred the pictures from the phone to the card.
Yeah, okay, so from the internal memory of the phone onto the card. Oh, and the idea behind that is that you can then pop the card out and then plug it in either directly into a computer if it has an SD card slot on it, or via a cable, as we've said. So the computer that you've got, does it have an appropriate slot to take the card out
yes,
and place
it
in there?
It's a Lenovo IdeaPad 150.
I understand.
And I'm using a PhotoFun Studio 8.0.
Right. So this Lenovo device, is that a Windows device?
Yeah, it's a Windows.
It runs standard Windows. Okay. It could be that the particular application you're using to try and open it doesn't like it. I mean, I'm assuming these are standard JPEG photographs. Clearly, it should just work. But I would suggest trying to use maybe a different piece of software to open it. Yeah. When you plug in the card, does it appear as a little separate drive, like a D drive or an E drive?
On the screen and. Yeah.
And you open it and you can see the little icons relating to each picture or not?
No. It starts to download with a circle with arrows on it.
Yeah.
And that's when the caption comes up. Can't display the pictures.
Yeah. Okay. Norman, if you would be so kind, if you leave a contact number or an email address, I'll look into this for you because you've done all the basic things correctly. I'll look into it and we can get this fixed over the next day or two.
Thank you, Fevzy.
No, you're welcome. It's just that sometimes when people have done all the right things, then you're into fairly obscure territory.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is necessarily the most entertaining place to do that.
No worries.
I'm happy to try and sort Norman out in that
Brilliant.
Sense. And Norman, although I don't know you, will go for a drink later, okay, mate?
And if people want free technological advice, they can follow you on Twitter.
They can. At Gadget Detective, you can come and ask for advice there, or you can just come and say hello. or if you have a more in-depth problem, you can go to gadgetdetective.com, where there is a free technology advice forum where I and others will share information and advice. So have a look there. But Twitter's a good place to start, I think.
Fevzy, we'll be back with us in a couple of weeks' time.